From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Tom Porter, and for Thursday, April 24th, this is Maine Things Considered. A boost for Senator Susan Collins. For the first time, all four unions representing workers at BIW endorse a Republican candidate. The state makes changes to the troubled Maine Care Rides program, but some advocates are still not happy. And tough times for residents of a Richmond trailer park ordered to vacate their homes after a sewage overflow problem causes the water to be shut off.
I don't have where to go. I don't even have any family.
Those stories and more coming up. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. It was a day of firsts at Bath Ironworks, where members of all four unions opted to give their collective endorsement to a single candidate. And bucking a long-time tradition at the shipbuilding facility, Thursday also marked the first time that the unions chose to support a Republican over a Democrat. AJ Higgins has more on that story.
Only 2 weeks ago, union workers at Bath Ironworks stood by proudly as the product of 5 years' work, the USS Zumwalt destroyer, glided into the Kennebec River. All four unions, representing more than 4,000 shipbuilders, draftsmen, designers, and others, made headlines again today by endorsing Republican Senator Susan Collins.
Having the endorsement of these four unions at this terrific shipyard, representing the best employees in the world, means so much to me.
6 years ago, when Collins faced a liberal Democratic challenger and former Congressman Tom Allen, BIW's largest union threw its support behind the Democrat. Collins won the election to a third term, and she says she made a point of returning to the shipyard the next day to make a personal commitment to the workers she met at the gate.
That was the last event of the 2008 campaign. And how thrilled I am today that our first major announcement of the 2014 campaign is right here, back at this yard, and from the great men and women who work here.
Union leaders say they are grateful for Collins' efforts in her role as a senior member of the Senate Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. In fact, local S6 International Association of Machinists President Jay Wadley says Collins works as hard in Washington as any of the shipbuilders at BIW.
She cares about this yard, and more importantly, she cares about the men and women that work here. She's affectionately called this place her yard. I've heard that from the CEO in there. And we say right back at you, you're our senator.
Collins' Democratic opponent, Shenna Bellows, never got the chance to campaign for the support of BIW workers. Wadley confirmed that his union decided to support Collins before Bellows declared her candidacy last October. Bellows says while she would have liked the shipbuilder's endorsement, it won't have an impact on the breadth or depth of support she enjoys from organized labor.
We have received twice as many union endorsements, including some of the state's largest unions, like Teamsters Local 340 and the IBEW Electrical Workers Unions. We've received the unanimous endorsement of the Maine State Building and Construction Trades Council. Working class folks across the state are lining up behind my campaign because we need an ally in Congress, a senator who will fight for their jobs and their interests.
Bellows is an outspoken advocate for diversification at BIW beyond the military sector, saying that even as the yard's parent company, General Dynamics, enjoys record profits, employment opportunities there continue to decline.
The shipyard has lost over 2,000 jobs in the last 18 years that my opponent, Republican Susan Collins, has been in office.
Collins says that despite some criticisms over the high production costs of the Zumwalt destroyers, its capabilities place it in a class by itself, and that BIW has a clear role to play in the future of our national defense.
I was very encouraged when the Secretary of the Navy was here recently for the christening of the Zumwalt, that he said we need more ships. We need more ships to meet our military requirements and for the security of our country.
Collins, who helped Maine get the $3.3 billion for the Zumwalt, says BIW is under contract to build two more of the destroyers. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And the union endorsement of Susan Collins is the subject of this week's Across the Aisle, our weekly political forum with Dan DeMerritt, political consultant and former communications director for Republican Governor Paul LePage, and Cynthia Dill, a practicing attorney and former Democratic U.S. Senate candidate. They spoke with Keith Shortall.
Happy Thursday, Dan and Cynthia.
Good afternoon. It's windy.
Hello, Keith.
So, as we just reported, all four labor unions at Bath Iron Works today announcing that they have voted to endorse U.S. Senator Susan Collins in her bid for re-election, the first time that these locals have endorsed a Republican candidate for federal office. Cynthia, the Bellows campaign has said they're not surprised. They knew this going in and made the decision to take their position anyway. Should they be concerned?
I don't think the Bellows campaign has anything to be concerned about, but nor should they be surprised, nor anyone should be surprised. Senator Collins has a prominent role on the Senate Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, and BIW is owned by General Dynamics, of course, which is a large corporate parent that received over $20 billion in government aid in 2012. So I think people understand generally, since Senator Collins has a good chance of winning and she plays an important role in making sure that BIW is adequately funded, that, you know, they wouldn't bite the hand that feeds them.
Dan, is it more important for candidate Bellows to sidle up to the BIW unions or to stick with her core constituency, many of whom might be considered more progressive or in favor of a peacetime transition?
Yeah, well, the challenge for Shana Bellows is that her core constituency is not a path towards a general election victory. And not being able to prevent a Republican from securing the endorsement from the four major unions that represent essentially all the unionized workforce at Bath Iron Works, begs the question, what other challenges Shana may have when connecting with other industries, other constituencies in Maine who see Susan Collins, who, to disclose, I used to work for, back when I started in politics, as a great champion and advocate. And that's really the strength that Susan Collins brings to this campaign, is three terms of being a great champion for Maine industries and constituent service. And that's why the union has come out, the unions have come out in support of Senator Collins. And it's no surprise that Senator Collins and her campaign is really launching their campaign effort with this announcement.
But Dan, isn't it true that Bellows has a good shot at getting the endorsements of other unions around the state? Maybe not BIW, but
I certainly think she will. She has gotten some already. The core union groups that tend to support Democrats in partisan elections are likely to line up behind her. But this is a big one. I mean, Bath Iron Works is flagship employer in the state of Maine, and it just speaks to the kind of service that company, those workers have gotten from Susan Collins. It's interesting, when she goes to visit the shipyard, which she frequently does, she'll often go to the union hall first before she meets with management. That's just kind of her approach, and I mean, she has that same approach across all industries in Maine, and it pays off, and that's why she's Maine's most popular political figure.
Unions are political animals, and while the union agenda or union values may be X, when they're deciding who to endorse, they're really thinking about, well, which candidate has a good chance of winning, and what's the downside? I mean, the risk in not endorsing Senator Collins, when she works so hard for bringing in the bacon, so to speak, to BIW, is that the last thing they need in the likelihood that she's reelected is to not have Senator Collins there in their corner. So I think the union, if they really looked at the issues that are at stake, General Dynamics is a large corporation that makes billions of dollars in profit, and the number of jobs at BIW is going down. So you'd think that perhaps they would gravitate towards someone like Shana Bellows, who does stick up for workers' rights and not necessarily is a huge proponent of the war machine. But I think, BIW is the fourth largest private employer in the state, and Senator Collins, as Dan said, is an overwhelmingly popular senator who has great constituent service. So this is no surprise, I think the Bellows campaign is doing a good job at getting the message out about all the other union endorsements that they have.
The bigger risk, though, Keith, the unions, they're not so much concerned about Susan Collins being offended and not being a friend if she gets reelected. Their bigger concern is that Shana Bellows gets elected and she advocates for conversion or peacetime uses for that facility that don't employ nearly as many people and don't have an impact on protecting our troops and sustaining our superiority in our armed forces. That's their major concern, and that's why they're coming out for Susan Collins in this campaign.
I think if you were to do a poll today on the broad population in Maine, a majority of people would love to see some diversification at Bath Iron Works. It once was a private ship-making industry that built, you know, large ships that were engaged in private commerce, and there's no downside to, you know, diversifying the economy and opening up these shipbuilding jobs to, you know, commerce. So I don't agree with Dan in that regard.
All right, Cynthia, Dan, see you next week.
Thank you, Keith.
Dan DeMeritt, political consultant and former communications director for Republican Governor Paul LePage, and Cynthia Dill, a practicing attorney and former Democratic U.S. Senate candidate. They spoke with Keith Shortall. It's 5:45 now. Still to come, residents at a Richmond trailer park face eviction after a sewage overflow problem causes the water to be shut off. And the state chooses another out-of-state contractor to take over most of the troubled MainCare rides program, to the concern of some community advocates. This is Maine Things Considered.
With this roundup of other Maine news, I'm Ed Morin. Creating a state database of concealed handgun permits and encouraging healthcare providers to screen patients regularly for physical abuse are among dozens of recommendations from a panel of Maine officials, healthcare providers, and law enforcement members who examined recent domestic violence homicides. The Domestic Abuse Homicide Review Panel released its biennial report today. The panel was chaired by Assistant Attorney General Lisa Marchese, who's had a lot of experience prosecuting homicides.
To my knowledge, the Homicide Review Panel is the only entity in the state of Maine that reviews deaths with an eye towards making systemic changes to save lives and hold people accountable.
Department of Public Safety Commissioner John Morris says of the 26 homicides in Maine last year, 12 were related to domestic violence. Republican Governor Paula Page has let a solar energy bill become law without his signature. The measure establishes broad solar energy goals for Maine, including increasing the amount of solar on the roofs of Maine homes and businesses. The Maine legislature was not able to override LePage's veto of another solar bill that would have restored a program that provides rebates for residents who install solar panels and would have provided funding to help low-income Mainers buy heat pumps. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has agreed to change proposed rules regarding the use of spent grains as animal feed. FDA had proposed that the centuries-old practice of using the byproduct of the beer brewing and distilling process as feed for cattle be prohibited unless it were dried and packaged. Brewers and farmers had said the mandate would have ended the practice and required farmers to buy more feed, while brewers would have borne increased disposal costs. First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says the FDA's top food safety official posted a blog saying that the recycling of human food byproducts to animal feed contributes substantially to the efficiency and sustainability of the U.S. food system and is thus a good thing. Conservation experts are reminding beachgoers to be mindful of nesting areas now that endangered piping plovers have returned to the southern Maine coast. Maine Audubon issued a statement saying nesting pairs of the tiny shorebirds have been sighted this month on sandy beaches from Ogunquit up as far as Georgetown. Audubon scientist Laura Minnick-Zitsky says Maine saw a steep decline in plover numbers between 2002 and 2007 with a gradual increase since then. She says last year the state had 44 nesting pair. She says the birds, whose nests are small divots in the sand, are very vulnerable and should be left alone.
We can all share the beach. It just takes some respect. So it takes just being observant. And if you see one, keep your distance. Ask all people, leave your pets at home.
And Minnick-Zitsky says if you must walk your dog on the beach, keep it leashed. Audubon notes that dog ordinances on local beaches vary by town. The town of Scarborough faces a $12,000 federal fine after an unleashed dog killed a piping plover chick at Pine Point Beach last year. And gusty winds and low relative humidities have pushed up the fire danger in much of southern Maine, much of the area south of a line from Holton to Fryeburg. The Maine Forest Service says the fire danger is very high in a large swath of southwestern Maine, running from Kittery to just above Fryeburg and over to Millinocket, and high danger is reported to the east away from the coast. Forest Ranger Specialist Kent Nelson says a red flag warning has been issued for York County, which means conditions would allow fire to escalate very rapidly. For MPBN News, I'm Ed Morin.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. Maine's Department of Health and Human Services has selected new brokers to run the state's MaineCare Rides program starting July 1st. The program was riddled with problems last year under the Connecticut-based broker Coordinated Transportation Solutions. That company lost its bid for the next contract year, but another out-of-state broker, Logisticare, won the majority of the new contracts. As Patty White reports, some advocacy groups are concerned problems will continue under Logisticare.
Atlanta-based Logisticare currently brokers rides in York County for the MaineCare Ride program, which provides non-emergency transportation to medical appointments. But as of July 1st, the company will be responsible for four of the state's six regions, which cover counties from Aroostook to Washington to Androscoggin. Logisticare Senior VP of Operations Robert Harrison.
Well, it's an exciting opportunity, and we look forward to doing there what we've been able to successfully do in Region 8, that's the York County region.
But not everyone in Maine would call Logisticare's experience in the state a success.
We have concerns that Logisticare was chosen to handle such a significant part of the state.
Sarah Gagne-Holmes is executive director of Maine Equal Justice Partners. She says a number of complaints were lodged against Logisticare when they first began brokering rides last August. Among those complaints, that it caused some clients to be late to appointments or miss them altogether. Gagne-Holmes says there are lingering issues.
Just knowing that some of the more experienced transportation agencies that had been providing the services prior to Logisticare coming onto the scene, felt that they couldn't work with Logisticare. And so they stopped being one of the providers of rides.
That agency is York County Community Action. Rick McCarthy is a consultant for the Maine Community Action Association.
What I worry about is that Maine has had a very strong community transportation system where one provider takes revenue from a variety of sources, including MaineCare Transportation, to serve the needs of everybody in their region. And what's happened in York now is that that's broken up. So Logisticare has the MaineCare money, and York's doing other things. And I worry that that might get replicated in other regions of the state as Logisticare expands.
Democratic Senator Colleen Lehovich says she was surprised that DHHS awarded so many contracts to a company that has had past performance problems. Lehovich was co-sponsor of a bill that was ultimately vetoed by Governor Paula Page, which sought to replace out-of-state MaineCare ride contractors with local nonprofits.
We're spending millions of dollars on these contracts, millions of taxpayer dollars. And I think the taxpayers need to get their money's worth, and I think MaineCare members deserve a level of service that they haven't seen.
Two of the state's contracts were awarded to local community action programs. Panquis Community Action will serve the Bangor and Augusta regions, and Waldo Community Action will serve Lincoln, Knox, Waldo, and Sagadahoc counties. Waldo Community Action Executive Director Keith Small says his organization provided rides under Connecticut-based Coordinated Transportation Solutions. But under the new contract, it will also broker rides.
One thing that will help us is our provider side and our brokerage side of this operation will have the same software. That a lot of what caused us difficulties this past year is that we had our software with the Coordinated Transportation Solutions software had several hiccups along the way.
The contracts awarded by DHHS can be appealed till May 8th. Requests for comment from Republican lawmakers and DHHS were not returned by airtime. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Residents of a Richmond trailer park have been ordered to vacate their homes by 5 o'clock today because of a sewage overflow problem that required water to be shut off. Most of the residents are low income and on disability or public assistance. Some say they'll be forced to sleep in their vehicles. Others don't know where they'll go. And as Susan Sharon reports, they blame the park's owner, who in turn says he's been duped by the man he had hired to fix the mess.
Okay, yeah, we'll get that, Bob, all right?
Tyson Goldstein and his roommate, Brett Hollowell Sr., have been without water for 2 days. They've got dirty dishes in the sink and no place to take a shower or use the bathroom. Just down the road, sewage from their aging trailer park is leaking into a nearby brook. And that's why there's an eviction notice from the town sitting on the kitchen counter. It was hand-delivered Wednesday by the code enforcement officer. Goldstein says his heart sank when he read it.
I mean, I don't have where to go. I don't even have any family. Brett's my family.
Brett Hollowell has a car, but like several other residents in the park, he also has two dogs, which makes picking up and moving somewhere difficult. An even bigger challenge is coming up with the money for a hotel or another apartment. He's on a fixed income, and right now he's broke.
What are you going to do come 5 o'clock?
I have no clue. Pray. That's about it. We're about that when the time comes, I guess.
James Valley, the code enforcement officer, plumbing inspector, and health officer for the town of Richmond, says he had no choice but to ask residents of Meadowbrook to vacate after their water was turned off because of a malfunctioning sewage pump.
So basically there was no water coming in and no water to, no way of discharging the water. So by those standards, the plumbing code says I have to shut it off because it's a unsanitary living condition.
In addition, leaking pipes were causing the trailer park to use 10% of the town's water, even though just 9 of the trailers in the park are occupied. Valley says the town of Richmond is prepared to help qualified residents with general assistance, but that's the extent of assistance that can be offered.
It is not the town's responsibility to find them new living quarters. That would be the property owner.
People are asking me, are you responsible? Technically, I am responsible.
Russ Edwards, now 80 years old, is the park's landlord. He says he's owned it for nearly 20 years. During that time, town records show he's racked up about $15,000 in unpaid property taxes. He also owes close to $20,000 in unpaid water bills. That's one of the reasons the utility shut off water this week. But Edwards, who lives on Peaks Island and says he's on a fixed income himself, says there's a reason why he couldn't afford to pay.
I haven't had any rent now since last October, and I only got a half a month in.
Edwards says the man he hired to serve as his property manager, fix the leaking pipes, address the sewage overflow, and collect the rent for him, has withheld the payments, failed to follow through with corrective action, and misled the park's residents. John Wilson paints a different version of the story. He says he's spent thousands of dollars of his own money to try to make improvements to the trailers, many of which are in poor condition and not up to code. And he says Edwards has turned his back on a chronic problem involving a leaking pipe.
He refused to fix it last winter, saying that it was just a water table issue. We ended up, again, out of our pocket having to hire excavators to come in. They had to dig 10 feet down and 10 feet over, and they found two massive holes in the pipes, and we had to have that fixed and replaced. We've been telling him about these leaks. He refused to fix those. The maintenance man told him about the leaks. He refused to fix them.
One resident who is able to leave is Steve Connery, who's lived at the park for about a year. He's not sure where he'll go, but he says he does have a job and more options than most of his neighbors.
There should be some human compassion built into this, but it just seems so, well, this is cut and dry, so everybody out. And there is no thought about the people that live here. And that's what it seems like to me. Nobody just gave any thought.
Meanwhile, landlord Russ Edwards is now facing a notice of violation from the Department of Environmental Protection that he says he's working to address. Failure to do so will result in more penalties. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
It's about a minute and a half before 6 now. Time for a weather check with Paul Janus.
As we go into the overnight hours, we still have the storm system developing off to the east, giving us quite a bit of a breeze for the overnight, although high pressure will ridge in over us for our Friday, and this will taper things down a bit, giving us plenty of sunshine and less winds. And then looking ahead for the weekend, a double-barrel low-pressure system will move in over the northeast. It'll slow down, and we'll see on-and-off rain showers for both Saturday and into Sunday. Partly cloudy skies, breezy for the overnight, lows in the upper 20s north, 30s south and coast. For tomorrow, Friday, mix of sun and clouds, highs in the low 50s north and coast near 60 across southern sections. Saturday, we'll see mostly cloudy skies, a chance of scattered showers statewide late day, highs at 45 to 55. Sunday, another cloudy day with rain showers, highs at 45 to 55. And on Monday, we'll have increasing bouts of sunshine, highs at 45 to 55 once again. This is meteorologist Paul Janis for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Thursday, April 24th. We had production help from Barbara Caridi and Mal Leary. I'm Tom Porter. Thanks for listening.